As the blazing sun beats down mercilessly, you feel the scorching heat etch into your darkened skin. It might feel good about now to have some blazing heat. The pungent odor of copper vats permeates the air, and around you, your fellow slaves moan and groan to the crack of whips and clubs in the hands of Egyptian taskmasters. And you reflect, it was just a month ago that your brother, weakened by the work and the heat, fell to the ground and was beaten to death by those same taskmasters. You can taste the sweat trickling down your face, but you're glad to taste it, since you will get no water for another 3 hours. The taskmasters just don't care if you're thirsty. You see the long lines of disheartened, haggard slaves like yourself, marching to the command of taskmasters, carrying crude buckets of copper ore in and out of dangerous mines. And you wonder, why? Why me? Why did I end up as a slave in such a wretched, miserable system? And you think, what day is it? And it doesn't really matter, because one day just blends into the next, all of them alike. And you also wonder, where is God? Where is the God of our forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? What happened to the promises God made? And over again you ask, why? Now, we know that the God of the Old Testament brought those Israelites out of that Egyptian slavery with great and mighty miracles. And we recently kept the days of unleavened bread and are here today on the Sabbath because that same God is in the process, we know, and perhaps heard during the days of unleavened bread, God is in the process of bringing us out of an Egyptian slavery spiritually. God is in that process now. Also, with great and mighty miracles, our calling, our conversion. But God is also in the process of bringing us into an Israelite slavery, spiritually, a different kind of slavery. Do we really understand what it means to be a slave? Do we really know what that means? Have any of us ever seen a slave? Maybe sometimes you feel like a slave or being worked like a slave. But have any of us ever really seen or met a slave? You ever talked to someone? Slavery still exists in the world today in various places. Have you ever met or talked to someone? When we read the scriptures about Egyptian slavery or about being a slave to Jesus Christ, being a bond slave to God, a bond slave to Jesus Christ, we really have a depth of understanding about what that means and the emotion, the feeling that goes with that as far as what God intends for us to understand. How many other true Christians through the centuries who read scriptures about being a bond slave to God knew exactly what Christ was talking about because they themselves had been in bond slavery and they knew exactly what it meant, could have known what it meant to be a slave in Egypt, understood what it meant to be a bond slave. The New Testament calls Christians at times bond slaves. So what I want to do today is examine the subject of slavery, especially the contrast between slavery in Egypt and slavery in Israel. Have you ever thought about the difference between slavery in Egypt and slavery in Israel? The days of unleavened bread that we have just completed really picture our coming out of Egyptian slavery. We understand that. But do we also understand the days of unleavened bread are just as much a picture about coming into an Israelite slavery spiritually? What does that mean? To choose to be an Israelite slave. Let me ask a few questions. Why did God even allow slavery to exist in his called out nation of Israel? Why did God even allow that? Did God just overlook it? Did God just tolerate slavery in Israel? And what is the difference between Egyptian slavery and Israelite slavery? Is there a difference? What lessons are there for us from Old Testament slavery? And why does God refer to Christians under the New Covenant as bond slaves on the one hand, but calls us his children on the other hand? God calls us both, bond slaves and children. And perhaps most importantly of all, to whom are we in bondage? Whose bond slaves are we? It's a subject we examined during the preparation for Passover, during the Days of Unleavened Bread, and certainly in the time between now and Pentecost. Something to think about. Whose bond slaves are we at this time? I want to take a little bit of time to contrast Egyptian slavery and slavery in Israel. Most of us probably, you know, not being close to the subject, not ever having experienced slavery, or maybe never having talked to someone, you know, who has been a slave, since those who actually experienced slavery have long died, may tend to think of slavery only as it existed in the United States, which was horrible enough. But maybe that's the most familiarity we have with the subject of slavery. We may assume that slavery in Egypt was like slavery in the United States, but wasn't. Now, in some world empires, that was true. In the Roman Empire, in the Greco-Macedonian Empire, slavery was based on an economic foundation. That was the foundation of slavery. It was the economy. Its purpose was monetary gain. That's why there were slaves in Rome. That's why there were slaves in parts of the Greco-Macedonian Empire. People were captured and merchandised for money and to prosper their owners. That was the main purpose behind that kind of slavery. That was horrible enough. But what about Egypt? What is your concept of slavery in Egypt? Maybe you watch the Ten Commandments when it comes around every year, starring Charlton Heston, and you get a picture on television of from that movie what slavery was like. But if God says that we're to come out of Egyptian slavery, Egypt as a type of sin, well, then it's important to have an accurate picture of what that is so we can understand what God means when he says that. What is Egyptian slavery spiritually doing to us if we're not careful? Why is it so evil? Why should we hate slavery to sin or slavery to spiritual Egypt? I want to read a quote from a man who was 2,000 years closer to the subject of slavery than we are. And he understood better because he had access to records that no longer exist. I'm talking about Josephus in his Antiquities of the Jews. I'd like to read a paragraph from something he wrote about Egyptian slavery. He said, "Now it happened that the Egyptians grew delicate and lazy as to painstaking," meaning as to hard work, "and they gave themselves up to other pleasures, and in particular to the love of gain. They also became very ill affected towards the Hebrews, as touched with envy at their prosperity. For when they saw how the nation of the Israelites flourished and were become eminent already in plenty of wealth, which they had acquired by their virtue and natural love of labor, they," the Egyptians, "thought their increase was to their own detriment," to Egypt's detriment, "and having in length of time forgotten the benefits they had received from Joseph, particularly the crown being now coming to another family, they became very abusive to the Israelites and contrived many ways of afflicting them. For they enjoined them to cut a great number of channels for the river and to build walls for their cities and ramparts, that they might restrain the river and hinder its waters from stagnating upon its running over its own banks. They set them also to build pyramids, and by all this wore them out." It's an interesting phrase. Josephus says they, by all this they wore them out and forced them to learn all sorts of mechanical arts and to accustom themselves to hard labor. And 400 years did they spend under these afflictions, for they strove against the other, which should get the mastery, Israelites or Egyptians? The Egyptians desiring to destroy the Israelites by these labors, and the Israelites desiring to hold out to the end under them. Catch that, the Egyptians desiring to destroy the Israelites. Israelites and Egyptians were, in a sense, in a life and death struggle against one another. Egyptian slavery was not like in the U.S. or in Greece or in Rome. The purpose of Egyptian slavery came to be to destroy a people, to absolutely destroy them by wearing them out. And it came because of hatred and jealousy for Israel. The Egyptians wanted total destruction of the Israelites. That was their purpose. And a modern-day example, the closest thing that we might think of to this kind of slavery would be that which happened in Nazi Germany, where the purpose was to enslave the Jewish people, to annihilate them, and not to just gain financially from their labor, but to destroy them. And that's what was going on in Egypt. It came to that point where there was this life and death struggle for survival. Now, think about again today as a Christian, as one of our goals to come out of Egyptian slavery spiritually, to come out of the slavery to sin. The architect of today's society, spiritual Egypt, motivated by hatred and jealousy of God's people, of spiritual Israel, has produced an age. Paul calls it this present evil age. And it's a society designed to enslave us spiritually, if we're not careful. For what purpose? Why would Satan want that to happen? Well, he's interested in destroying Christians by wearing us out spiritually, if he can do that, leading us spiritually astray, if possible, to destroy a people. That's what Satan's purpose is. And that's what Egyptian slavery spiritually is all about. And that's why God says, hate slavery to sin. Hate being a bond slave to sin. See the evil of it. And why we go through the days of unleavened bread and are reminded about by Passover that we can be forgiven of our sins, that we can come out of Egyptian slavery and into an Israelite slavery. Remember the scriptures that remind us that Egypt is a symbol for sin. Revelation 11, verse 8, talks about the two witnesses and their dead bodies will be in the street of the great city, which spiritually is called Sodom and Egypt, where our Lord also was crucified, talking about Jerusalem. But here it talks about being spiritually Egypt, or this society, this age, and those that destroyed, would seek to destroy Christianity and Christians, and where they killed Christ, spiritually called Sodom and Egypt. Hebrews chapter 3, we'll pick a few verses out here, but the entire section of Hebrews 3, beginning in verse 14, all the way through chapter 4, verse 11, is a metaphor comparing Israel, who left Egypt, with Christians who have left Egypt spiritually. Just read a few verses in Hebrews 3, and beginning in verse 14. For we have become partakers of Christ if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast to the end. Well, it is said today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion. For who, having heard, rebelled? Indeed, was it not all who came out of Egypt, led by Moses? Now with whom was he angry 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, whose corpses fell in the wilderness? And to whom did he swear that they would not enter his rest, but to those who did not obey? So we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief. Notice verse 2 of chapter 4. For indeed the gospel was preached to us as well as to them. But the word which they heard did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in those who heard it. And notice verse 11. Let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest, lest anyone fall according to the same example of disobedience. And there is this, throughout these verses, there is this comparison of coming out of Egypt, and for us today, coming out spiritually of Egypt, out of slavery in Egypt, and coming into, we'll see as we go on, an Israelite slavery. Paul does the same thing if you turn back to 1 Corinthians 10. He makes the same comparison. We'll just look at a few verses here. 1 Corinthians 10, the first 13 verses. He compares Christians to Israel who were baptized into Moses when they left Egypt. And notice in beginning in verse 1, just a few verses, 1 Corinthians 10, verse 1, moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers are under the cloud. All passed through the sea. All were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and ate the same spiritual food. And all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. So just as the Egyptians were committed to destroy the Israelites, Egypt today, this present evil age, is constructed in such a way to destroy God's people unless we come out of it. And there is this type throughout the Bible of Egypt being a type of sin, type of slavery that we're to come out of. What about slavery in Israel? How is it different? Did God just ignore it and put up with it and kind of wink at it and just tolerate it? What was the purpose for slavery in Israel? It's hard to grasp at first unless when you go through the scriptures and see that slavery in the Old Testament in Israel was actually a very positive institution. It was benevolent, and it was a merciful institution. It was an institution to be admired, slavery in Israel was, because it had a unique purpose that never existed in any other kind of slavery in the annals of history. It was very different from any other type of slavery anywhere else in the world. There were several purposes for Israelite slavery, and there are parallels for us today in each of these purposes. Why, you know, why did God tolerate, put up with, or was there more? What was God's involvement more than just tolerating it? Let's look at a few purposes for slavery. Turn back to Exodus 21. Exodus 21. Again, several purposes. Number one purpose for slavery in Israel was to teach. You think, well, that's a strange way to teach. You know, have somebody in slavery. In today's terms, Israelite slavery was almost like an apprenticeship or mentoring program. More like that than the kind of slavery in the United States or in Egypt. Let's read Exodus 21, verse 1 and 2. Now these are the judgments which you shall set before them. If you buy a Hebrew servant, so this is an Israelite buying an Israelite slave. If you buy a Hebrew servant, he shall serve 6 years. And in the seventh, he shall go out free and pay nothing. Now, we'll talk about that duration for a little bit. But here it refers to an Israelite being enslaved to another Israelite. And God uses this Old Testament institution to teach us today what he's doing in our lives through our slavery to Jesus Christ. We'll see the comparisons of us being a bond slave to God and an Israelite being enslaved to another Israelite. How could you buy a Hebrew slave? You've got money in your pocket, you're prosperous. How could you buy, and why would you buy a Hebrew slave? Consider the example of a young Israelite man who doesn't listen to his father, didn't learn any kind of skilled trade, didn't apply himself to any studies of anything, began to be a sluggard, just lazy, you know, not really wanting to work. He never overcomes that habit of just laziness, of being kind of a ne'er-do-well. Didn't learn how to manage his money, didn't learn how to discipline himself to make, you know, to plan his budget, to stick to it, to be careful about his money, to prepare for the future. No Visa or MasterCard to bail him out. Couldn't just put everything on credit and bail himself out. There's no way to do that at that time. If he went into debt and couldn't pay his debt, he could be sold for his debts. And usually he would be purchased by a prosperous man who had a successful business or trade and could afford to buy a Hebrew slave. And for up to the next 6 years, could be shorter, but up to 6 years, for the next 6 years, the sluggard became the bond slave of the prosperous man. And during that time, he would be in a kind of apprenticeship. And he was to work with his master to learn his master's trade or his master's business. And the master had a responsibility too. We'll see what some of those responsibilities were in just a little bit. The sluggard was to learn how to manage his money. He was to learn how to manage his life and to turn things around. He was to learn by watching and to learn by doing, and eventually to learn how to build his finances, how to provide for a family, how to lead a family. And it was one of the best institutions for education that ever existed. Now compare that with today in most cultures. We take a sluggard who may end up stealing for a living because he won't or he doesn't know how to work. And we send him to jail or to prison, where oftentimes he learns from other criminals more about how to commit crime better than ever before. And in most cases, he comes out of imprisonment and he returns to crime, not having learned anything. Let's read in verses 3 and 4. Verse 3. Notice again, this same man, if he comes in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he comes in married, then his wife shall go out with him. Verse 4, if his master has given him a wife and she has borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her master's and he shall go out by himself. Now that sounds cruel. He's taken a wife, he has children, and now his up to 6 years have expired, and he's going to go out by himself, can't take his wife and children with him? Why would God do that? Or why would this institution of slavery do that? It sounds cruel. There's a very important lesson taught as part of his penalty for not having been responsible. Because now he is absolutely faced with, he has to face having been irresponsible. As a bond slave, he experience the consequences of that. That's why he was in slavery. And God didn't want him to forget what he had learned. And God wanted him to remember that he was responsible for his own actions and that there are consequences for what we do. Now he would have to go out and prove that he could take care of a wife and children so they wouldn't end up in poverty. It was for their protection that God said, you go out alone and you make your way and become prosperous enough. If you're successful, then you can come back and redeem your wife and your children and prove that you can take care of them, that you can provide for them. Otherwise, they would just end up being in the same circumstances that he was in before. But God designed it in such a way to teach and educate the bond slave. So to teach and educate was one of the purposes for Israelite slavery. God wants us to come out of Egyptian slavery and into Israelite slavery. Is God interested in teaching and educating us? Does God teach and educate us continually? Is that one of the reasons God called us, opened our mind, brought us out of darkness and into light? I mean, I grew up in a church that's darkness. And it wasn't until God opened my mind and I saw what a difference, you know, the light of the truth makes. And our whole life in God's church is part of a process of being continually educated and taught so that we become competent in the ways of God and living God's way of life. Notice a couple of verses, a few psalms that are just tremendous psalms as far as what they tell us about God. Psalm 25 and verse 12. In this matter of teaching and educating. Psalm 25 and verse 12. Who is the man that fears the Lord? Him shall he teach in the way that he chooses. God will teach in the way that God chooses. God teaches. Psalm 32 verse 8. Psalm 32 verse 8. I will instruct you and teach you in the way you should go. I will guide you with my eye. This is God talking. This is what God is doing. Then Psalm 71, verse 17. I just picked out a few. You can find many more and throughout the New Testament. Psalm 71 and Verse 17. O God, David said, you have taught me from my youth, and to this day I declare your wondrous works. You have taught me from my youth. God is in the process of teaching and educating us continually. And every time we open up our Bible and read and learn from it, we're being educated by God's mind. And God has opened our minds to his truth. So Israelite slavery, one of its purposes was to teach and educate. And that's exactly what God's doing to us, with us today, as we cooperate with that in our Israelite slavery spiritually. But there was another purpose. Let's go back to Exodus 22. Exodus 22. And verses 1 through 4, there was another purpose for Israelite slavery. Exodus 22, verse 1. If a man steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters it or sells it, he shall restore 5 oxen for one and 4 sheep for a sheep. These were things that provided a livelihood for someone. You know, ox or sheep, you sold them, you butchered them, and you restored 5 to 1 in one case, 4 to 1 in another case. If the thief is found breaking in and he is struck so that he dies, there shall be no guilt for his bloodshed. But if the sun has risen on him, there shall be guilt for his bloodshed. He should make full restitution. If he has nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. If the theft is certainly found, the theft is found alive in his hand, he has stolen it. Whether it is an ox or a donkey or a sheep, he shall restore double. So he can't say, okay, you got me. Here it is, I'll give it back to you. No, you give it back plus another one. There was punishment involved in this. If a homeowner, in this case, killed a thief on his own property in the dark, no penalty for the homeowner. If the thief was caught, he could be sold for his theft. Here's how it might work. Let's suppose someone steals your car and wrecks it, just totally wrecks it. And it's a source of income for you. You get to work or you use it in your work, get you back and forth to work. When the thief is caught, if he hasn't wrecked it, he has to give it back and pay double. But if he's wrecked it and it's no longer, you know, a viable automobile, he has to give back up to 5 times the value. If the car is worth $10,000, he has to give you $50,000 for it. What if he can't do it? He's got $1,000 in his name. So he owes $49,000 to you. Well, he becomes your slave. He becomes your bond servant for up to 6 years and works off the value of what he owes you. It was an effective way to discipline and correct a thief. There was discipline and correction that was being taught in this system of Israelite slavery. Is God ever interested in disciplining and correcting us? Well, we all need that at times, don't we? Not just our children, but we need discipline and correction at times. And the way it's described in Hebrews 12 is really a beautiful description. Hebrews chapter 12, remember in verses 5 through 7? Hebrews 12, verse 5 through 7. This is the way God thinks. This is the mind of God. Hebrews 12, verse 5. And you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as to sons. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens, and scourges every son whom he receives. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons or daughters. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? Because we love our children, and we correct in love, and we correct to teach. We explain to our children, you know, the reason that I'm punishing you or going to punish you is because I have to teach you. God holds me responsible for teaching you something, and this is what I want you to learn. This is what we're learning in all of this. And then whatever the punishment is, you know, it's administered. And then you reinforce that as a parent and said, because I love you, this is why I, you know, either whatever the discipline, you know, why I did this, to teach you, to show you that here's, you know, here are the consequences down the road if you don't, or if you go this way. but here's what I'm trying to teach you, so you go this way. That's how God works with us continually. And Israelite slavery was designed to do the same thing, to discipline and correct. But there's a third purpose. And this really was unusual, very unusual, because the third purpose was to promote loyalty and love for one's master. To promote loyalty and love for one's master. Back in Exodus 21. And notice verses 5 and 6. Exodus 21, verse 5 and 6. But if the servant, the end of his time of service, Exodus 21, 5, plainly says, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out free. So not only because his wife and children, but he says, I love my master. Then his master shall bring him to the judges. He shall also bring him to the door, to the doorpost, and his master shall pierce his ear with an awl, and he shall serve him forever. And the word forever here means as long as the conditions of the agreement exist. As long as both are alive and the conditions exist, that's how forever is understood in that context. So here is an institution of slavery designed to build love and loyalty. We don't usually think of that as connected with slavery. And what I want to emphasize about Israelite slavery, God didn't just permit and tolerate Israelite slavery, He designed it. God designed Israelite slavery. And it's an excellent picture of our slavery spiritually to God and to Jesus Christ. A type of Israelite slavery pictured by the days of unleavened bread, reminding us we come out of sin. We not only come out of slavery, we go into slavery. Come out of slavery to sin to be a bond slave to righteousness in Jesus Christ. Out of Egyptian slavery into an Israelite type of slavery. And it was just a beautiful institution. Our being a bond slave to Christ and a bond slave to God is to engender love, loyalty for our spiritual Father, our Master, Jesus Christ. We're to grow in love and loyalty for God and Jesus Christ as we draw close to them, as we obey God's laws. That's part of our coming out of Egyptian slavery. Notice 1 John 4, 16 and 19. 1 John 4. Does the Bible say anything about coming to love and to be loyal to God because of how He works with us and treats us? 1 John 4, verse 16. And we have known and believed the love that God has for us. We've known that. We've experienced God's love in our lives. God is love. And he who abides in love abides in God and God in him. Look at verse 19. We love him because he first loved us. And that's our relationship with God. We come to love God and grow in loyalty to God because of how he treats us and his love for us. So a third purpose, to promote love and loyalty for one's master, was another purpose of Egyptian slavery. Now there are some other interesting laws that teach more lessons. Exodus 21 in verse 16, and each of them have, again, parallels for us today. Exodus 21, verse 16. Why was this? Why did God put this in place? He who kidnaps a man and sells him, or if he is found in his hand, shall surely be put to death. This is how God felt about merchandising human beings, which much slavery around the world involved merchandising human beings. Could I sell my bond slave? If you were my bond slave, could I sell you to make a profit? Not according to God's instructions here. I couldn't sell you to make a profit. If I was caught doing that, I incurred the death penalty in ancient Israel. God wanted to be sure that Israel understood that slavery, as it existed in Israel, had a special purpose, and it was not to be defiled. And anybody who defiled God's regulations and rules, they were put to death. What if a master had this attitude? You know, I'm glad you were caught stealing my car, because I'm going to take it out of your hide. I'm going to work you in the daytime. I'm going to work you in the evening. And I'm going to wake you up in the middle of the night when you're sleeping and work you some more. And I'm just going to work you and work you and work you. Was there a way to protect a slave in Israel from harshness and cruelty? Well, the instruction that God gave says that now that I owned you as a bond slave, I couldn't treat you as a bond slave. But I had to treat you in a different way. I had to treat you as a hired employee. And I had to give you all the benefits of an employee, including time off, vacation time, no pay, but other benefits. And it was all part of God's design. Look at Leviticus 25. Leviticus 25, in verses 39 through 40. Leviticus 25, verse 39. And if one of your brethren who dwells by you becomes poor and sells himself to you, you shall not compel him to serve as a slave. As a hired servant and a sojourner, he shall be with you and shall serve you until the year of Jubilee, till the year of release. As a hired servant and a stranger, a citizen from another country who is temporarily working for you. Why did God do that? Why was there such a law? God wanted the person who was sold into slavery to never lose his self-respect and dignity. Now, that wasn't like Egyptian slavery. That wasn't like slavery in the U.S. or anywhere else. But God wanted an Israelite who was sold into slavery to never lose his self-respect and dignity. And I, as his owner for now, and as his master, I was never to lose my respect for him. God didn't want to destroy that respect. We'll come back to Leviticus, but turn to Job 31. Job 31 speaks about this. Wouldn't expect this to be in Job, but here it is in Job 31, verse 13 through 15. Job writes, "If I have despised the cause of my male or female servant when they complained against me, what then shall I do when God rises up? When he punishes, how shall I answer him? Did not he who made me in the womb make them? Did not the same one fashion us in the womb?" God had this concept that we were to learn of respect and dignity. It was a concept of a very high ethical standard of treatment under the institution of slavery in Israel. God operated and said it was to function with this very high ethical standard that he put in place. Is that how God treats us? Does God treat us with the highest level of ethical standards and conduct? Is that how God looks at his children, his bond slaves? Look at a statement in 1 Peter 1. And again, you can find many more similar statements of how God treats his children, his bond slaves. 1 Peter 1, 3, 4, and 5. 1 Peter 1, verse 3. "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to his abundant mercy," God treats us with abundant mercy, "has begotten us again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled, and that does not fade away, reserved in heaven for you, who are kept by the power of God, through faith for salvation, ready to be revealed in the last time." God calls us, God extends abundant mercy to us, gives us this hope of salvation, keeps us by his power, and treats us that way continually. This high standard of conduct that God himself exercises in working with his children. Go back to Leviticus 25 for a moment. Leviticus 25. And verse 40. Again, it tells us, as a hired servant and a sojourner, he shall be with you and shall serve you until the year of Jubilee. The Jubilee system, seven-year cycles. Your bond slave was to serve you until any seventh year in the cycle. Even if there were less than 6 years left, he might end up serving you two or three or four. You know, but when the seventh year came around, you were to be released. They were released at the end of that sixth year, even if they had not served a full 6 years. They could choose to stay with you if they wanted. Maybe they felt what they were learning was so valuable that even though they had been there only a year or two, they decided they wanted to stay longer. They could do that to continue to learn how to be on their own. Why, again? Why else? Verse 41. Let's read verse 41. And then he shall depart from you, he and his children with him, and shall return to his own family. He shall return to the possession of his fathers. They could choose to leave, return to their family, to the land that their family owned. There was no caste system with God. Even if your father had been a bond slave and he had learned his lesson and he could be restored to his property, could go on to prosper and be a successful person, you could go back to your home area. And again, the potential for growth and success was never destroyed, was never diminished. Verse 42, for they are my servants whom I brought out of the land of Egypt. They shall not be sold as slaves. They could become bond slaves only for a relatively short period of time to learn a lesson, not to be merchandise for profit. Now, our slavery as part of the body of Christ within God's church really has the exact same purpose. Have you ever had this experience? I have, from, I guess an extended family member years ago, a close friend. Maybe you've had a similar experience. Somebody that learns of your faith or your beliefs, and maybe when you first came in the church, or maybe down the road a few years, and they might say to you something like, "You mean your church won't let you work on Saturday? Well, how are you going to advance in your job? And don't you have promotion opportunities? You mean your church won't let you work on Saturday? You mean your church makes you take off from work or school a week and a half each fall? Why can't you just take your vacation when you want in summertime? You mean your church makes you take off that time? Why not just, like everybody else, take vacation in summertime? You mean your church makes you pay a tenth of your income to the church, and then makes you save another tenth so you could go to this vacation when you don't want to go to that when you want to go in summertime, but you have to go in fall? What are you, some kind of slave?" You ever heard that phrase used? I have. What are you, some kind of slave to your church? And it's an interesting concept that sometimes people have. Well, you know, as a matter of fact, we have been bought and paid for, haven't we? Jesus Christ owns us, and all that we have, we vowed our lives to him and put everything we have in his hands. Remember the scriptures? Look at a few. 1 Corinthians 6. 1 Corinthians 6 and verses 19 and 20. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 19 and 20. "Or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, which is in you, which you have from God, and you are not your own? For you were bought at a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's." 1 Corinthians 6:20, you were bought at a price. Galatians 1, verse 10. Galatians 1 and verse 10. Paul said, "For do I now persuade men or God? Or do I seek to please men? For if I still please men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ." We are bondservants of Christ. We're a type of Israelite, of an Israelite bondslave. We have been bought and paid for by Jesus Christ. And we've chosen to be slaves in Israel spiritually, slaves of God. But although we're bond slaves, we aren't treated that way by God or by the government of his church that we're all put ourselves voluntarily under. We're not treated by slaves. God also teaches us how to work with one another, how ministers work with a flock, how husbands with their family and wives with their husbands and parents with their children. God teaches us, you know, even though we're all bond slaves, we don't treat one another that way. There's an interesting statement back in Leviticus 25, and we pick it up in verse 43. Leviticus 25, verse 43. Leviticus 25, verse 43, you shall not rule over him, your bond slave, with rigor, but you shall fear your God. You shall not rule over him with rigor. We've been bought and paid for by Jesus Christ, men, women, husbands, wives, parents, children, sons, daughters. Christ teaches us, don't rule over one another with rigor, but with care and concern, the same way he does. And the same way he instructed Israel to treat bond slaves in ancient Israel. Just as there were rules of Israelite slavery then, so there are rules for us today about how we are to treat one another. And you find it throughout the scriptures. Now that you as a bond slave have learned, or I as a slave owner have learned that I have to treat you as an employee, that I have to give you decent working hours, vacation, time off, Sabbath, holy days, no pay, but treated like other employees. How could God make sure that I provide a safe working environment for you? Did God even address that? So that I didn't take the attitude, well, he's just a bond slave, so he gets the worst job, the most dangerous job, and the one that, you know, nobody else wants to do. Let's go back to Exodus 21. Exodus 21 and verse 26 and 27. There was no OSHA then, but notice what God said. Exodus 21, verse 26 and 27. If a man strikes the eye of his male or female servant and destroys it, he shall let him go free for the sake of his eye. And if he knocks out the tooth of his male or female servant, he shall let him go free for the sake of his tooth. God built a measure of protection into his system so that masters wouldn't just abuse their slaves. But now let's consider this. You've reached the end of your years of service. Your time of serving me is over. And maybe I've begrudgingly treated you as an employee and, you know, as God said, but now it's time for you to go. Now it's time for you to leave. Can I just say, well, it's been nice knowing you. Your service to me is over. You're free to go. And I hope you mess up again so I can get you back real soon and put you back to work again. Is that the attitude that, what did God require? Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 15. It's time to leave. It's time to go. Your service is done. Deuteronomy 15, verses 12 and 13. If your brother, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, is sold to you and serves you 6 years, then in the seventh year you shall let him go free from you. And when you send him away free from you, you shall not let him go away empty-handed? What? You mean there's more I have to do? I can't just let him go out and say, bye, see you. Do well, I hope, and if you don't, I'll see you again. It says you don't send him away empty-handed. Verse 14, you shall supply him liberally from your flock. Let's stop there for a moment. Shall supply him liberally, generously from your flock. You may say, well, I don't have a flock. I'm a leather tradesman, or I have a different kind of business. No, the point was your source of income. Whatever your business was, you were to supply him liberally from your source of income. And, read on, and from your threshing floor, grain, food, ordinarily could also include household goods. Do you need a bed? Do you need a table? Do you need some chairs? You know, what else do you need as you go out and begin to reestablish yourself? You know, what you're to give to him liberally. What a tremendous lesson for both the master and the bond slave. Give liberally and abundantly, just as God does with us, with his grace, his mercy, his forgiveness. And that wasn't all, verse 14. And from your wine press, from what the Lord has blessed you with, you shall give to him. Here's a nice bottle of fine Cabernet. Take it with you and enjoy it at the Feast of Tabernacles. He was to give liberally and generously to this man who had been his bond slave. Why did God do this? Why did God give this instruction? Because God wanted the relationship of slavery in Israel to be a positive situation, something that would build a bond between the master and a bond slave, between a generous master and his bond slave, something that would build the entire nation and that would set Israel as an example for all the other nations. That it would build something. And today in spiritual Israel, as we are in spiritual Israel, part of the Church of God, it's the same. We are bond slaves. In our slavery, God treats us in a way that wins our admiration, our respect, and our love, the way that God treats us. And the way God's people treat one another, the way we are to treat one another. If I had spent 6 years trying to teach you a skill and how to manage your money and how to lead and serve a family, but I had been cruel to you and treated you with rigor and just been a very nasty master, would you learn from me? Would you really want to learn from me? Would you want to practice those things to honor me? Of course not. But if there was a bond of love and respect and admiration, those are all good foundations for learning. Those are all excellent foundation for learning skills. And if we were friends, although master and bond slave relationship existed, but we were also friends and had become friends through that time. And now you have a skill that you can take out and take with you and earn a living and be successful in life. And I've taught you that and how to be successful in life and how to have a happy life as your friend as well as your master. After you're released from being a bond slave, you might go through life trying to emulate not only your master, but your friend, trying to follow his example. Turn to John 15. The same is to exist in our spiritual slavery to God and Jesus Christ and within God's church. We want to emulate our master and our friend. John 15, verse 14 and 15. Christ's words, he said, "You are my friends if you do whatever I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends. For all things that I heard from my Father, I have been made known to you." To the degree that we respect and love an individual is usually the degree to which we will allow him to teach us. And that applies in our relationship within the church, with our family, with one another. We're emulating God, our master and our friend, Jesus Christ. Slavery in Old Testament Israel was intended to be really a magnificent institution designed by God for very special purposes. It was to accomplish something. It teach us a lot about coming out of Egyptian slavery and into an Israelite slavery, pictured by the days that we've just finished keeping, the days of unleavened bread. Why does God call us slaves, but also calls us his children? Why does he call us both? Go back to Proverbs 17, verse 2. There's a principle here in Proverbs 17, 2. Why does God call us bond slaves, servants, bond servants, but also calls us his children? Proverbs 17, verse 2. A wise servant or bond slave will rule over a son who causes shame, and will share an inheritance among the brothers. Interesting statement. A wise bondslave who learned lessons by being conquered in the right way in submission to his master could receive an inheritance as a son. You might say that slavery prepared him for sonship. What about us? Is our slavery preparing us for sonship? How about Proverbs 29 and verse 21? Proverbs 29 and verse 21. Proverbs 29, verse 21. He who pampers his servant, the word pampers today often has a very negative connotation, but there it's meant in a positive way, who takes care of, who follows God's laws, who was respectful. He who pampers his servant from childhood will have him as a son in the end. Slavery prepared him for sonship. And if we allow ourselves to be conquered and humbled in attitude, yielded to God, our slavery prepares us for eventual birth into the family of God as children, spirit-born children. It's a beautiful system in ancient Israel, and it pictures God's purpose today. During this season of unleavened bread and the time between unleavened bread and Pentecost, it really is profitable, I think, to study the subject of slavery, to think about it, and to examine our lives, to see where we may still be in bondage to Egypt. And we do that. We reflect, we think about it as we prepare for Passover, as we go through the days of unleavened bread. I want to read some verses here in John 8 and verse 30, because there were some here who didn't understand what Christ was saying when he talked about freedom. John 8 and verses 30 through 35. John 8, verse 30. As he spoke these words, many believed in him. And Jesus said to those Jews who believed him, "If you abide in my word, you are my disciples indeed. And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." John 8, verse 32. They answered him, these Jews assembled around him, answered him, and said, "We are Abraham's descendants and have never been in bondage to anyone. How can you say you will be made free?" The freedom that Christ was speaking of was spiritual freedom. They were thinking of political freedom. And also saying that because we're Abraham's descendants and God made this covenant with Abraham, we're not in any spiritual danger, they thought. But only God's truth can truly make us free. Verse 33 again, they said, "We are Abraham's descendants, have never been in bondage to anyone. How can you say you will be made free?" Jesus answered them, "Most assuredly I say to you, whoever commits sin is a slave of sin. And a slave does not abide in the house forever, but a son abides forever." As true bond slaves of Jesus Christ and his Father, we can abide in the house as children, ultimately as spirit-born children in the family of God. Romans 6, verse 16 through 18. Romans chapter 6 and verses 16 through 18. Very important words, good to reflect on and meditate on as we think about what we've learned just recently. Romans 6, verse 16, "Do you not know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one slaves whom you obey, whether of sin leading to death or obedience leading to righteousness? But God be thanked that though you were slaves of sin, yet you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine to which you were delivered. And having been set free from sin, you became slaves of righteousness. We entered into that Israelite slavery as slaves of righteousness, came out of an Egyptian slavery as slaves of sin. And it's, again, a magnificent picture that God has painted. The days of unleavened bread reminded us that God, in his love and his kindness, has miraculously brought us out of Egypt and into an Israelite slavery through the sacrifice of his son. One final scripture, 1 Corinthians 7. 1 Corinthians 7, verses 21 through 23. 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 21. Paul writes, "Were you called while a slave? Do not be concerned about it, but if you can be made free, rather use it. For he who is called in the Lord while a slave is the Lord's freedman. Likewise, he who is called while free is Christ's slave. You were bought at a price. Do not become slaves of men." We are to be slaves of God, servants of God, bondservants in God's system. We've been called by God while in slavery, slavery to sin, slavery to spiritual Egypt, but we've been called to become his children, to become sons and daughters for all eternity. Our value to God depends on our being his slaves, his bondservants. And so it is time to ask, and to ask ourselves, you know, the question, to whom am I in slavery, or in what parts of my life am I still in slavery to Egypt? In how much of my life is it now in slavery to Israel, an Israelite slavery that God intends? Israelite slavery really was a magnificent institution designed by God to teach us important spiritual lessons. It's something that, again, we don't often think of slavery in those terms, but it's how God designed it, so that we could learn and continually be taught and educated about his way of life. So let's continue to beseech God in our prayers to help us come out of Egyptian slavery as we learn to grow in coming into an Israelite slavery. Choose to be an Israelite slave.